Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat. Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. I'm Manoj Kevalramani, and today I have with me my colleagues Nishita Suresh and Rohan Seth. And we're going to be talking about the impact of the coronavirus outbreak, the pandemic. We're all in lockdown right now. So we're going to talk about the economic impact of all of this. And is everything doom and gloom going forward? We've seen over the last couple of weeks that there has been tremendous volatility in the markets. In India, over the last month, BSE Sensex has gone from roughly around 40,000 to 26,000-27,000, and that's meant a lot of wealth has been wiped out. But Rohan and Nishita did an op-ed recently in which they were essentially saying that, look, it's not that the world economy is doomed. It's not like the outbreak has completely ruined everything. There are still winners and losers. So we'll try and sort of delve into this a bit. So before we sort of go into more details, Rohan, can you just tell us exactly what is it that you're arguing in the op-ed? What is the argument that you're making?
Sure. So the main argument in the op-ed was that I wouldn't say it's wrong to say that the world economy is doomed, but at the same time, don't say it. Specifically because there are two problems with that. Firstly, it's sort of an understatement, right? Because it's just so screwed. But at the same time, when we say that the world economy is doomed, we lose a lot of nuance because we've abstracted this to a level where it's very hard to say what exactly is doomed. So we've sort of tried to identify what sectors are winners and what sectors are losers, what companies are better equipped to deal with this pandemic. So we start talking about it and we realize that there are companies who are a lot better suited to dealing with this pandemic. So for example, I think we started I don't know if you remember, Manoj, but I think earlier last month we had an all hands meeting and I was talking about what company has gained the most from coronavirus. And this was in the early days. And across the office, people said Google, they said Netflix, and without a lot of reasons to back it up, right? Because they essentially said there will people will stream more stuff like this. But so the answer to that was Zoom, because Zoom has gained a lot. Its share price has increased a lot and its stock has increased. So it's very interesting how this hive mind operates. And this means that, let's say, tech companies are better equipped to deal with something of this nature, of this scale. So the op-ed specifically says that don't say the world economy is doomed. Whenever you say something, add a little bit nuance to it and say that why this particular sector is facing the issues it is and how can it go, so on and so forth. So, yeah.
So I think the broad argument is that, yes, there is an impact on everybody, but there will be winners and losers. And for the example of Zoom that you're giving is essentially, it's a platform which is suited to online conversations, online engagements, meetings, and so on and so forth. And given the current environment where we have to social distance, it's likely to, you know, become far more useful because people are going to gravitate towards it because that's the only way where you're going to have these office conversations or even, you know, chats with your friends and get-togethers, you know, with multiple people sitting and sharing. I mean, I've known lots of people who've gotten back with their old school friends groups of, you know, 20, 25 years ago and had a Zoom party of sorts. So in that sense, it's suited for this environment, right?
Yeah, something like Zencastr that we're using to record a podcast.
That we're using right now.
It's just such a live example. Right? Zencastr is probably doing really well right now.
Okay, Nishita, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think with the given pandemic, there are the losers and the winners. So if you're playing good cop and bad cop right now, let me just do the good cop first. So along with Zencastr, I think there are also these other apps like House Party is one of them where you basically do videos and you play games and things like that. So a lot of these apps and the startups are gaining a lot of momentum and it's a good time for them. But also for the big companies itself, it's not going really good, like for Facebook or Google or Apple, because if you look at Apple, its supply chain runs through China and it has already been severely impacted. So this is having mostly a ripple effect on a lot of other companies also. And if you also look at the gig economy around the world, or especially in developing countries, the contract workers versus permanent job workers, it has a lot of impact on the gig economy workers. And this is not going to be easy for most of the countries. So, yeah.
The other sort of interesting thing that there exists is, so, I mean, tech companies, you can classify them into different categories, right? One is platforms which are providing a certain kind of service, which don't necessarily have deep supply chain dependence or manufacturing dependence and things like that, which are probably much more suited to be able to take advantage of these things. And therefore, I would say something like a Netflix, you know, any of these entertainment platforms, because you're essentially providing a service as opposed to providing a tangible physical product. Therefore, the Apple example that Nishita gave, right, that Apple would be reliant on its supply chain across the world, not just in China, but China is essentially where you're going to do much of the bulk manufacturing. Those guys are going to get challenged, but folks who are providing services are not going to get challenged. The next thing is, if you look at companies beyond tech, and you look at traditional companies which are doing manufacturing, which are providing goods, which are providing network solutions. In that also, again, maybe this framework can apply. Companies which are providing services and solutions and consultancies would probably do better. But companies which are doing tangible goods, which are dependent on a lengthy supply chain, would probably struggle. Would you agree with that?
Yes, broadly, but with exceptions. So I think if we, let's look at it this way, right? There is a company in any sector that has huge fixed costs. It's going to suffer because the business will have to sort of slow down / shut down, and you wouldn't have a lot of demand coming in, but you still have to pay those fixed costs to maintain your business, right? But if you can quickly scale up or scale down, if you have lower fixed costs and higher variable costs, it's easier to navigate through this. So let's say a lot of people have been saying that maybe Uber doesn't make it through this pandemic, right? Because drivers don't get a lot of rides these days because of the lockdowns. And so the idea here is that Uber has raised a lot of money and it can quickly scale down. There's every chance that Uber is going to survive this, as is Ola. At the same time, you say, and so the exceptions part that I was talking about earlier before, so Amazon, let's say, has huge supply chains and complex delivery networks, right? And there's every reason to say that Amazon will not survive this, but it's just too big. It has almost infinite capital. And we see that it has sort of modified according to the times. So Amazon has basically suspended the delivery of everything that is non-essential. And we had the Prime Minister's speech yesterday in which he announced a 21-day lockdown. And you see, soon after that, one of the ministries has said that the delivery of essential commodities to e-commerce networks classifies as an essential service. So even in a business like Amazon, which has huge, let's say, fixed costs, they would still survive because they're operational and delivering essential goods and services. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with what Rohan is saying. And I think it depends on what company you are and what kind of costs are affecting you at the moment. But I still think this is going to be a norm if for the next at least 3 weeks, companies will get into a format where they will find a way around it, just like how all of us are trying to find a way around working from home in itself. So I don't think in the larger sense, it's wrong to say that it's going to be gloomy for everybody. And even if it's going to be gloomy, it's going to be gloomy for everybody together.
Okay, so we've moved away from the optimism to saying that it is going to be gloomy. But the other sort of thought that I had was, and this is, I was having a conversation with a friend recently who works with a large consumer goods multinational F&B company. And his view was that, look, we have a massive supply chain in the US and we have a massive delivery network in the US. And, you know, where we our sort of delivery capacity, our sort of just the transport capacity that we have outstrips UPS, FedEx and all of that in the US. And therefore, our objective right now is to just make sure that stores are stocked because we are seeing large scale buying happening at a very early stage. Our objective is to keep stores stocked. And in that process, within sort of by early March, we've already doubled our quarterly, targets. And therefore, the objective is right now just keep. So in that sense, it depends on how long these lockdowns last. If these lockdowns last for a period of, say, 2, 3, 4 months and things still seem difficult, then even, whoever is gaining, particularly even these kinds of companies which are providing essential supplies, will start to suffer. Because you can scale down for a certain period of time. After a certain point of time, once you scale down for a lengthy period of time, it becomes very difficult because you will have to end up cutting costs further. You'll have to end up hitting other people's incomes, and that will create a ripple effect. But if you can scale down for a limited period of time, there are sort of, you will bear certain certain costs, but you will still survive. You will not be really bad. But on the other hand, because of the sort of early sort of stress and people panic buying and doing those sorts of things, there are lots of companies that have also made sort of serious profits in the lead up to whatever could be a shutdown for many countries, right?
Yeah, I think you pointed out something really interesting here, because companies with FMCGs and you know, stuff like sanitizers, all of this, right now, because people are hoarding, people are panic buying, a lot of countries are going into lockdown. And if this, let's say, lasts for 21 days, 30 days, it's still manageable because the supply chains haven't been that impacted yet. But it's going to be interesting to see how these companies cope after these 30 days. What if this, these lockdowns are extended to another 2 months? It's going to be extremely interesting to, I'm saying interesting, but these companies are going to suffer because they can't essentially scale down as much. And that's where the fixed cost framework comes in, right? With the supply chains sort of stagnating, we'll see that companies will begin entering into losses. And even though people have met their already quarterly targets and so on and so forth, because so much of stuff has been panic bought, but at the same time, we will see that if this continues for a prolonged period of time, these FMCG companies may not be very well put to survive this. At the same time, I would say stuff like Zoom is an excellent example. The longer this lasts, the better it is for Zoom. But at the same time, you could apply this to, the gaming industry, right? A lot of people have a lot more time to spend on streaming or on gaming and stuff like this. So the longer this lasts, I think the more beneficial it is for people in the gaming industry, people in the streaming services. So it's a complex set of winners and losers. And the key deciding factor here is whether or not you can scale down or scale up in the case of the gaming industry if required. And we've seen even in the digital realm, these streaming services not operating at their optimum best because so much demand has come in over the recent times. So we've seen Hotstar and Netflix lowering their bandwidth. So we'll see how these companies go. But I really think that if your digital can scale up or down quickly, it's going to be a lot easier for you compared to if you're a car manufacturer.
Yeah, I'm quite disappointed that I didn't buy that PlayStation when I really wanted to. Now I'm stuck. I really
wanted to pick it up. You got to make your investments work for you, Manoj.
This is a strategic mistake. I've been talking about it for the last 2 months, saying I need to now buy that PlayStation, but I still haven't. And now I don't have the option of buying it.
And this is one of the situations where the word need actually is like exactly what it is. Like, you need a PlayStation.
Yes, I would have needed that thing right now. But Nishita, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think what Rohan said about, what's going to happen after is what is going to be more interesting, because for Netflix and HBO and all of that, if people are getting so hooked on to streamlining services, then people might have some sort of psychological fear of just going to cinema hall or, just putting in the effort to going to the cinema halls and watching a movie there. Or it can be the other way around too. They would have overdone the whole streaming thing, so they will go and watch as many movies as possible. Because right now, Bollywood and Sandalwood and all of them are going through like thousands of crores of losses because of delayed release dates and no shootings and things like that. So I think whenever we come out of this, it's going to be nice to look at all these angles.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, right? What happens to... Because everything is going to essentially... You can no longer shoot. You can no longer do some of those things. So probably our television serials will become much longer in terms of how they dramatically stretch a particular episode over 5 episodes. So I presume production will change in that sense. But yeah, in terms of what will happen to the movie industry, because if this is prolonged and you can't make those movies, an entire chain gets hit. From actors to people working in sort of movie making to theaters, distributors, everybody. The impact of that will only be felt like 3, 4, 5 months after the lockdown actually ends. Because there will not be enough content also to be put out. Because there will be no new stuff available.
Yeah.
So, even if people are willing to go to the cinema halls, there's really nothing there to watch.
Yeah.
So we'll have to think of something new, right?
That's true.
One more thing. some sort of similarity, and excuse the metaphor, the analogy I'm going to use, because I'm not one for analogies, but look at, let's say how this virus operates, right? It targets lungs that are, or respiratory systems that are already, let's say, underdeveloped or they're weak or damaged, right? A similar impact is going to be felt through industries. So if you have startups that are, you know, haven't taken off quite yet, or if there's companies that are extremely old and, you know, weak in the sense that they use six straws and stuff. So the demographic, and I know this analogy isn't really working. I can feel it as I say it out loud, but the demographic of this virus, in terms of the people it targets and the companies it targets, is sort of similar, right? So the interesting point about this is that once all this is over, once, let's say, the lockdown is over, you can bet that certain companies are primed to come out of this stronger, because a lot of their competition is going to be raised. And Amazon is case in point. I mean, Amazon is currently operating under this lockdown as well. So at the same time, when this is over, a lot of its competition is going to have already suffered. But Amazon, right now the stock price might be low, but Amazon's going to shoot up, right? Because people are going to realize how essential delivery is. And Amazon is the only company that does that with the efficiency that it does. So we'll see after this lockdown ends that certain companies like Amazon, like just companies who operate within, let's say, the home delivery space, are going to shoot up like nothing else.
With that said, I just want to highlight to all our listeners, if you're listening to this, Rohan's stock pricing advice is subject to market risks. Please buy on your own risks.
Oh, yes, yes. Rohan is
not certified in giving you stock advice, so please use your own thought process.
Also, in case you're using All Things Policy as a platform to learn more about stocks, I strongly advise you don't do that.
I'd also like to point out another thing that we have missed about Rohan is how he has not endorsed Cult yet.
Yes.
We should talk about some of the health apps.
Right.
Yeah, that's the other thing, right? Health apps would be really, really, yeah, that's a good point, Ishita.
That's just an amazing case study, though, right? Because all of the business model was sort of, it's just so, let's say, traditional economy, right? There's a proper gym, and you just eat fit, and there's kiosks that give you stuff, all of that. It's all very physical, which is managed through an online app. That's a way for consumers to interact. But you see how they have basically pivoted to sort of deal better with the virus. And sorry about all the details of Cult, and I want to throw at you, but basically they've gone from actual gym classes to, you know, live classes. And the idea is that they designed all these workouts through which you can, you know, cult live at home. So you can just open your phone and, you know, dance around your living room. There's a dance fitness session, or you could, you know, do HRX or SNC, stuff around your living room. So I think the way they have adapted to this scenario is just incredibly cool. And it's an interesting case study for any company, I imagine, who wants to learn from how to deal with a crisis such as this.
But from what I understand, Cult Fitness already had an online component in terms of, you know, train at your home, right? Was that about sending a trainer to your home, or was that online virtually?
No. So the idea is to basically stream a workout to your home, right? If you have any sort of free space around and where you can put your phone and then have your workout done there for 50 minutes, Cult Life or something. But it has, the number of sessions has scaled up quite a lot. There's a proper schedule. They basically transpose the schedule they used to have for the physical sessions and put it on the app for the live sessions. So it's incredibly user-friendly. It's incredibly natural. I know it sounds like a Cult endorsement and a lengthy one at that, but just use the app. It's a great case study.
And if you don't want to use the app, there are other health apps that you can use to work out at home. So I'm sure those guys are also making a lot of money out of it right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been trying my level best to try and keep up with a particular platform on YouTube, which I used to follow, Fitness Blender. It gives you tailored workouts. So, yeah, that's another thing, right? I mean, there's a lot of money to be made for companies that are in this particular business. And if they can pivot, like you're saying, Cult is trying to do, then it really works for them, right?
Right.
All right. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
No, I think that's it. I mean, pivot, scale down, and don't keep saying the world economy is screwed up, right? No, because that's dangerous. Try to add some reasoning, rationale behind it. so that people understand why a particular sector is facing problems, because otherwise this conversation won't go anywhere.
Okay, so the things that we've learned today are that don't think of everything as doom and gloom. There are still winners and losers depending on what the model of your business is, whether you can scale up, scale down, and what kind of supply chains do you work with. And lastly, the most important lesson, do not take stock tips from Rohan. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Nishita. Thank you so much, Rohan.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.